Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, September the 14th, 2017. 17 minutes past the hour, past 12 o'clock. You're tuned into WWGH Radio. I am Scott Spears, and we have a great program in store for you over the next 2 hours today. We're joined live in studio by a gentleman I've wanted to have on for quite a while, and I'm sure you remember him very fondly being in your homes through the art and magic of Columbus Television. He is Chuck Gillespie, and he is back in Ohio. He did move away, but he is back to do a tribute to Andy Williams coming up in October 20th, exact, to be at the Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus. Reservation 614-237-8887. Or you can go to chucksings.com and get some information about this big event, also on October 22nd. So don't miss it. We're very proud and privileged to be welcoming to these microphones for the first time Chuck Gillespie. Chuck, how are you?
Scott, it's great to be here. Nice to meet you, finally. I've seen your work, and I follow it, and I've talked to you on the phone, and congratulations for all you do and all the wonderful people that you brought to the air here in Marion, who don't get a voice as much as they used to, and people still are concerned about them, think about them, and you bring them. You bring them to them in the flesh and blood, and that's a tribute to you. Good job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you.
Well, it's true.
Did I get the name right on the building?
Close.
I was worried.
They did have a number in front of them. There might have been 93 before them, but they're the 94th Aero Squadron.
Aero Squadron Restaurant. I thought, oh boy, here I go.
You ought to go there sometime. It's right at Port Columbus. It's right on Sawyer Road. And you can go out back and watch them take off and land planes. It's a huge restaurant, lovely food, a great Sunday buffet. And we've had the pleasure to, I've known these people for years. The Rick Brunetta Big Band that I sang with for 15 years here has been there every Thursday night for going on 25 or 26 years. Amazing record. And I got a chance to be a part of them for a lot of those. So that's the Thursday night stand. And so it made it an easy transition for me when I came back and wanted to do Andy to do it there. It's an intimate room. It'll seat about 100 people.
When did you leave Columbus?
I left actually at the end of May last year and got in my car and drove to Florida with all my stuff. And the truck, it took a long time coming in terms of me pulling it all together and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. I demoed the show. I created the show, and then January of last year, at the 94th, I invited people to watch me, and we videoed the show because I had to, of course, as you know, with modern tech, you've got to get that website thing going. So I had to have the videos to accompany the website. I did that. Able to get some really good tracks, some of which I sent to you, of me in that show, and launched, and knew that I wanted to go to Florida to do a tribute show. And I wanted to pick an artist to do that I thought was underserved yet iconic to the right age group. And I'm a boomer. I'm proud to be a baby boomer. And for boomers and beyond, all the way to the greatest generation and all the folks in between, this artist was kind of a bridge. His TV work started in 1962. His TV work ended in 1971, yet he was from 1927 born and was actually performing with his three brothers as early as the middle 30s. So he stretches so many decades and so much time and so much activity. And I thought his story, the story of our lives, put against the backdrop of what he was doing and, of course, sharing 19 of his great songs. So Andy Williams was an easy choice for me.
What does a tribute show consist of?
Well, in my case, and I can't speak for other artists because I didn't really study them to do it, what I wanted to do was twofold. I wanted to present his music as a solo artist, and I wanted to kind of present it as much as I could in a timeline. I wanted it to sort of be from when he hit in the middle 50s with his first hit record, which was Canadian Sunset, a great song, in 56, all the way through into the Branson era and the records and the stuff he was doing with his history. So what I do is open with Canadian Sunset, and then I sort of stop down musically and I go back and I'll take 15, 18 minutes to, in a narrative, tell his life story from what happened from 27, born in a town of 700 in Iowa, in Wall Lake, dad, a railroad clerk, three brothers, mother who loved music, parents who weren't pushers, yet the times, for the times, if these boys had talent and they wanted to sing, well, it would probably help us out because we're running into the Depression here and there's not a lot going on in our little town except the railroad. Getting them on the radio was important. Once Andy could join the quartet in the middle 30s, they're off to Des Moines. Of course, that was the big 50K radio station, WHO. Then he moves the family to Chicago. Then he moves the family to Cincinnati. Radio jobs, both places, both big 50,000-watt powerhouses. And eventually, after that move, it's to Hollywood. They're offered a contract as a specialty act. And you'll recall, since you're very, very steeped in the nostalgia, and our audience will, groups like the Nicholas Brothers, they'd appear in a movie, had nothing to do with the plot, but for 3 minutes you'd see them tap dance their brains out, and then they'd leave, and then Esther Williams would come back, and the movie would continue. That's kind of what they did in some pretty bad B movies. They were a specialty act. But what happens to the family and to him there? Well, they meet Kay Thompson. She's dancing with Fred Astaire and Funny Face. She's also a choreographer back. She's helping artists under contract to MGM. He gets a chance to audition for Lauren Bacall's voice into Have and Have Not. That's the kind of tenor he had. Didn't do that, fortunately, for him. It would have been, I guess he would have enjoyed that, but they used her eventually. His voice was higher than Lauren Bacall's, and they didn't think she could sing too well. But that experience led Kay and the boys to form a nightclub act. The contract ends. They go to Las Vegas. They're the number one Las Vegas act in the history of Las Vegas to that time for 2.5 years. Hard, high energy, tough, tough work. They tour it. Finally, the boys want to split. One wants to go serve the U.S. in the Korean War. One wants to go back to work and back to school. The only one who wants to go on is Andy. Andy and Kay Thompson go to New York. They spend 4 years there before he hits his big break, Steve Allen hiring him to be part of The Tonight Show right after he had hired Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet. 1956, his first hit record, and not too long thereafter, a relationship with Pat Boone gets him a summer replacement show in 1960, and then by 1962, everything changes. Columbia Records signs him to the biggest contract in the history of music at that time. He ends up selling more records than any easy listening artist ever, the number one all time, as long as that category existed, and the beginning of a 9-year huge run. Beautiful kids, married a French chanteuse actress, Claudie Longet, great friends of the Kennedys, Bobby Kennedy. There's a lot of great stories. And then what happens thereafter? When he decides, you know, I'm tired after television. I've been touring every hiatus. I need to find some place to go. And Branson arrives. And it was, for him, it was a godsend. I can live and work. They'll come and see me. I don't have to travel anymore. He was extremely happy and built the theater that was named for maybe his most iconic and famous song, which he never recorded as a single record, only out on an album, and that's Moon River. So I tell all of that story and weave it through 19 songs.
To perform somebody's songs, do you have to know the person well?
I think so. I mean, I think you should if you're trying to do a, quote, tribute. Now, obviously, we've all seen people, good or bad, being Elvis, let's say. Let's pick, I know I'm going to pick on Elvis, I'll just pick on the people who do it. The costuming, the scarves, the hair. Are they really portraying the man? Are they portraying an image of the man? Are they just trying to do a voice? Is it an impression? I don't do an impression. I do a fan appreciation of his life. I think his life had lots of tenets of quality that we've lost in a lot today. You talk to people who represented not only Hollywood, but entertainment when it was, in our opinion, the golden age. People treated each other with civility. They didn't work blue. They talked and sang about optimism and songs of love and songs of unity. Yet were exciting performers. Andy did that his entire career. He wasn't flawless. We all have our problems and our flaws. But for most of his life, he was capable of of being an example of how we should live. He was a jet setter. And instead of us being jealous of the fact that he jet set it all over, we thought, how cool. Don't we want to be like Andy Williams? I want to look that good in that sweater, have a beautiful wife, gorgeous kids, and get on a plane, go to Aspen. Sounds like fun. He was leading that life. We dug it.
Didn't at one point later in his life he lose his voice for a period of time?
Yeah, it was a period of time. A lot of artists have go through that.
Yeah.
And it was he had some nodes, and the nodes were removed, and thank God he was able to sing again. Toward the end of his career, the folks who saw him in Branson the last couple of years, and he was 80, approaching 80, and, you know, God knows it'll happen to all of us, knock on some wood here, who sing. His voice was thinning out, and he just couldn't produce the sort of air power to make it to keep it broad and to keep it strong. But, you know, he still got, if you think about when he started professionally, 1935, he dies just several years ago and had been singing almost right to there. I don't think anyone in the history of show business is going to have a longer career as a pop singer than Andy Williams. Tony Bennett, bless his heart, is 90-plus, but he didn't really start professionally until post-World War II into the 1950s. So he's got about 60 years in. Andy sang for 75 years. It's okay for his voice to finally get out.
Yeah, that's a good run.
It's all right. He's playing a lot of golf.
The two things I think of when I think of Andy Williams, of course, Moon River,
yeah,
and the other one is Christmas.
Yes, of course.
He was married to Christmas, and for people who did not live in that time, I don't think they understand how closely Andy Williams' record at that time was associated with Christmas.
No, absolutely. All the artists seemed to have a Christmas show. In fact, well, television then, for good or bad, did reflect a sort of Judeo-Christian America. And with that, and it was also, unfortunately, in the earlier part of it, a relatively white America. So you had a pretty narrow view, in a way, of what this holiday represented. It wasn't unusual for people like Tennessee Ernie Ford or other Perry Como to end a show with a hymn. I mean, good. Think about people doing that today. That doesn't happen. Or a gospel song. Jimmy Dean, that doesn't happen anymore. But he made Christmas this festive event, wearing great colorful clothes, and what could he do? He could bring on his mom and dad, bring on Claudine, bring on the kids, and of course his brothers. His brothers and he had maybe the best quartet blend of any of them among the of Irish quartets, Caucasian quartets. I'm not going to compare them to the Mills Brothers or other great quartets. But theirs was an unbelievable blend, and so people would love to see these great specials, family specials, with these brothers and him just nailing it. And you'd look at him and go, wow, we didn't know you did that. Well, of course he did that. In fact, that was his life until the middle 50s, and he finally broke and was doing that thing himself. And I didn't understand and realize that until I studied him and read his biography several times to try to understand the pattern of where he came from and how his life changed, and the chances he took, and the success and failures he had. Losing his best friend in Los Angeles in 1968, one of his best friends, as Claudine and he are watching television, waiting for Bobby Kennedy to give them a sign, a physical sign, a little tug or something that says, we're going to get out of here now and head to the disco. Come on and meet us there for the private party. And Bobby, within 5 minutes, had been shot by Sirhan Sirhan. They go to the hospital. He calls. They go to the hospital. He's covered in blood, of course, and dead. Ethel says, we don't have a shirt for Bobby. He's got to have a shirt. Our own John Glenn is there, has an extra shirt in his car. They put it on Bobby. And he has no tie. And he takes his tie off, affixes it on Bobby, and he's buried in the tie. His funeral is at St. Patrick's. And I don't know if you're old enough to recall this, Scott, but it was nationally broadcast for Bobby Kennedy from St. Patrick's in New York. It's hiatus time because it's summer, so he's not shooting the TV series, Andy. And he's got a beard. Ethel says, "Can you have to sing for Bobby, and you have to sing his favorite hymn, and I do it in the show." He approaches the pulpit and a cappella sings a battle hymn of the Republic. That kind of a moment, that kind of an experience, I dare you to find any pop artist of the last 15 years who would do it or could do it with such true sincerity. We just don't see that kind of real heart. It always has a back story about profit and loss or business or promotion. He was a great businessman. He recorded Moon River before the movie came out. They were ready. He was also one of the guys who was tagged to sing the Oscar songs for several years when there was a group of them who would just stand up and sing all the Oscar songs. Well, of course, the ones he liked, he recorded all of his movie themes. And he's associated, I do many of them, he's associated with at least a half a dozen great movies. None of them are stuck on the movie. But we remember the movie because Andy sang Days of Wine and Roses. Andy sang Dear Heart. Andy sang Charade. Andy sang Love Story. Not on any of the movies. He was very smart. And he knew, and we knew, we'd like to hear Andy's version of it. There's really only one song that he recorded that people didn't hear on the radio, which was a big movie theme, from My Fair Lady, Street Where You Live. Great song. I have often walked down the street. This is going to be a huge hit. They shoot it out to the radio stations. 45s, you turn it over, had a B-side. DJs went, aren't you sick of this song? But yeah, we've heard it by a million people. Let's turn it over. And he had a hit. It wasn't a number one hit, but a hit called Almost There. And I tell the story, and of course I do that song. His music reaches the heart. And is it reached more women than men? Yeah, maybe. But when the guys come with their women, they like it too. Because they know who we are really. Or is that guy? Is that kind of guy? We'd like to be that guy. I started watching him on the couch with my parents when I was in fifth grade. I could go back after Ohio State was rioting and turn on the TV and get away from that and watch Andy kind of bring us all back. He was good at bringing us back to what's really important in our life. Not too many people since do that. And I have such respect for it. What an amazing life he led as an artist.
When I think of that story with Bobby Kennedy, you know, sometimes we get the impression that celebrities live on a mountaintop and they don't go to the grocery store and they don't have friends.
Sure.
And it's cocktail parties and limousines every day.
Yes.
That's not really reality for 99%. And I'm sure it wasn't for Andy.
No. Well, no, of course not. They had plenty of friends. They surely enjoyed the company of the Hollywood people. They knew a lot of them. But he, like so many, was very busy. You know, and you've talked to so many artists, actors, and they'll tell you they're up at 4 or 5 o'clock. They're in makeup. They're shooting until 9 or 10 at night. They're looking at their lines. They're getting 6 hours sleep, and they're doing it again 6 days a week or seven to shoot a movie. That is their life. When they go on, when they're between movies, what are they doing? They're collapsed. They're laying down somewhere. They're at a pool. Well, nice. Yeah, I have a nice pool, but I'm asleep. I'm not in it because I'm too doggone tired because this movie killed me. And then I got to go back on location. I got to get to Yugoslavia. I got to get shots. It isn't what you think. Shooting a television series during those days, a variety show, unless you were Dean Martin, was a very difficult thing. Dean, of course, didn't rehearse. He'd just come in, what am I doing, Pally? And they'd go over the songs, play them for him, and day of. Not Andy and not everybody else. They're in there humping that show out 5 and 6 days a week. There's comedy. There's all these segments. And, of course, the new material, specialty material, you got to get it written. You got to learn it. There's choreography. He knew how to dance. People kind of forgot that. But the Vegas days, he could move really well. You have to do all of that. But the show introduced to us the Osmonds. it introduced to us Antonio Carlos Jobim, who was just hitting this Brazilian bossa nova thing. And we went, wow, that's cool. And they'd have the informal spot, and Andy would take a spotlight on Jobim, and they would sing this Brazilian song together. And then there'd be comedy with Jonathan Winters, who was a semi-regular on the show. 9 years, NBC. You get 13 weeks off, and what would he do? Go on tour. It's one of the reasons his marriage finally collapsed with her, because he worked all the time. And the tour took him around the world. And he was a huge act in many countries, including England. Absolutely loved him in England. There's a great story about 67. He records a song that had been a jingle initially for Diet Pepsi and rejected, that was recorded in studio as an instrumental by a studio group put together called the Bob Crew Generation. Bob Crew produced it. It's called Music to Watch Girls By. They gave it a more kind of Austin Powers-y rock and roll background, and he wanted to be hip. And his sideburns were a little longer. 67, Summer of Love. So he records and puts out this song. Fiat in England uses the song to sell cars. England goes over the moon for the song. They love it. Now we jump ahead decades. He's in his 70s, probably mid-70s. It's not the first song he's thinking about doing in a show. England calls. We need two tours. Big money. Great. I'll get over there and sing Love Story. And no, we want you to really lead with. Yeah. And why? Because they had brought it back to re-advertise cars. And people fell in love with the song again in England. So here is Andy, not the young, spry guy over there, singing, boys watch the girls while the girls watch the boys who watch the girls go by. It's incredible. It's funny. It's amazing. But he was a worldwide superstar. And he had a voice that was not matched.
What was fascinating to me about Andy was when he went to Branson later in his career, like a lot of people do, he could pack the houses down there with tourists at the Moon River Theater. But every Christmas, he would still take it on the road.
Yeah.
He would take the Christmas show on the road and sell out the 1,400-seat theaters in Columbus and Chicago.
Absolutely.
And New York. Now, he's almost 80 at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, why do you think he still had that appeal at Christmas time? At Christmas time, he could still go out. It's the most wonderful time of the year. He owned it.
He had two Christmas songs that he recorded. You would think, for him to own Christmas, that he'd have a catalog of Christmas material. Really two songs. Most wonderful, fortunately for him, because he wasn't his call, he didn't own the song. It's being resold every year to sell tires or cars or Macy's or something. So it's always there. And by October, dun, 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 you're hearing it. It's huge. It's everywhere. So that's like part of our, it's like now it's revered like White Christmas and most wonderful time of the year. And it surely wasn't when it was released like that. There was all this other competition. The other is Happy Holiday, where he's melded Happy Holiday, holiday season, and holiday, those two songs. Kind of hip, kind of a hip thing. But that's it. That's it. That's all he does. So when I do it, I do a Christmas thing for him, of course. But I don't have more than two songs that are Andy's. Okay, here are Andy's Christmas songs, and I'll do everybody else's, you know, from Chestnuts to White Christmas. Stays in the genre, which he would do as well. Andy Williams, as a tenor, could do anything he wanted to vocally. So could sing songs like Lonely Street in 1957-58, which was this very depressing sort of 1950s rock and roll-y kind of ballad. And then he could do Love Story, which soars. And everything in between. He was never trained lesson-wise, except what he got in Hollywood. It was just from the School of Hard Knocks, Mom, and learning to be a harmony high-end. He was so beautifully musically gifted, as were his brothers. He had been a pretty heavy smoker for a number of years. He finally stopped. If you listen to his albums, or in his singles, the one thing that you'll notice, sometimes he sounds like a heavy breather. You get these huskiness in his tone, which kind of is a contrapoint to the ability to go high, to the range. He had a huge instrument, a great, great voice. And I love to sing the songs because it's a workout, but when you hit them right, you can't help but respond because of how they're written in the orchestrations. And I've been blessed to find the best orchestrations that are out there recorded of this material. My choice was simple. Do I put a band together in an economic band, so it'd be 4, 5, 6 pieces with synthesization, or do I do this? I'm doing it this way, at least at this round of my career, because I want the audience to have it, to let them feel it like the record. I want it to be as close to the record orchestra sound. And I've been lucky, and it took me months to find the tracks. But I've got some great tracks. And I use simple piano as well. The last song I sing is a simple piano track.
We talked about his divorce. We talked about the period without his voice. Were there any demons for Andy Williams? Was there?
Well, he liked to drink. And he liked women from time to time in his life. He wasn't a gambler. He didn't spend money foolishly. He, like so many, he got absorbed with the work. He probably, during the middle to late 60s, and it would be impossible not to, because he was getting accolades from everywhere, neglectful of the family. His relationship with his kids, he would probably, if he was here, say, I wish I could have spent more time with my kids. But that's a story you probably heard a bunch yourself from other people you've talked to. Because when you're chasing a dream like this, and you're being offered this, Andy, we're mounting the tour for that, and you've got to be here for that, and there's a movie over here, you go, you're a kid in a candy store. You've worked so hard to have that opportunity. And all he knew was hard work. It's the other part of it. He kind of worked too hard for too long. He was working hard by the time he was 8 and 9. Not like the Jacksons, because their dad, the Jacksons' dad was kind of like whipping them in junk. That didn't happen with these guys. Dad was like, we love you guys, whatever you need, we'll do for you. And mom was the music influence. But again, the times, the 30s, it was like, whoa, if we can make any money, and you guys are so doggone good, and you're winning all these amateur contests, what can we do? Where can we go? Do you want to go? Yeah, Dad, let's go. And they went. I don't see a lot of personal problems that none of them shadowed his life to the part of his ability to perform at all. He always wanted to be hipper. I think the Johnny Mathises of the world wanted that too. And the times did change. The pop records weren't there eventually. He wanted to be a pop guy. He wanted to be hip, and I think if he had any, failing grace, it was he wasn't hip. He tried to be hip, but he just wasn't a hip guy. But that's okay. We don't want you to be hip. We want you to just bring this thing to us that makes us feel good. We've got plenty of hip. We got Frank and Dean. You just be you. Be Andy. Be the guy from the Midwest who has a lot of heart, and who every mother would like to have as a kid, maybe. And I don't think that's a bad place to be.
Did he have a happy ending?
Well, health, yeah. I mean, how happy is one? He pretty much knew it was not going to happen. The cancer was killing him. He sort of announced it from the stage of Branson that he had it. He fought it as best he could, but it took him rather quickly. But in terms of his personal life, he became a little political later. Some of them do, and was a little right-wingy occasionally later on. And he had been pretty much non-political in terms of except his support of the Kennedys, who he loved, and they loved him. But there really was, you don't hear a lot about him doing the Democratic Convention or the Republican or the relationships with those people since, and Reagan and all that junk. Although I think he probably knew Ronald Reagan and were friends. But toward the end, he, elderly guy, not a lot of time on his hands. I mean, a lot of time on his hands, more than he ever had, sitting around watching Fox or something and starting to get these ideas about the world. I excuse every bit of that. Having seen my mother spend 8 months of her life in a retirement community in her early 90s, you have to excuse end-of-life behavior whenever it starts, because the changes they're going through, we don't know anything about until it happens for us. You see what's been announced recently with Earl Bruce in town. God, what a sweet guy. We had a chance to interview him on TV a lot, vital, healthy during those years. And now it's changed for him, and obviously changed for Glenn Campbell. People can change, but it's not the nature of who they were for the decades of their life. So I excuse end-of-life behavior, because you just don't. You don't. I don't think it's real. I think it's a change, and it's not a change to some original feeling. I think it's a change of, you know, look, follow the light. You know, our needs change. How we view the world completely changes. So, you know, it was he got ill and died. He didn't, you know, just, it wasn't like John Ritter.
Yeah, quickly. He lived a good long life.
A great long life, and he worked his whole life. Look at the places he went, the things he did. Oh, my God, what a life.
My last memory of Andy Williams, NBC was celebrating their 75th anniversary.
Yeah.
I believe it was 2003. And the show was 3 hours. It was live. It was from Rockefeller Center. It was in the SNL studio. They were trying to make it very hip.
Wow.
All the stars came back. And nobody had performed any musical numbers. And the show was way over on time. Pushed the local news guys back, and they were going over on time. And who comes out in the next to last segment? Because the SNL studio was Toscanini, his original studio at NBC.
Yes.
Arturo. And who comes out to sing? Andy Williams, Moon River.
Wow.
So in 2003, he was still the guy.
Yes.
They went to.
Yes.
And that's moment. I mean, he was older there, not hard to see.
Absolutely.
But he did not sing. He sang.
Yes.
It was his voice.
And
he
think
did his
of
thing.
Think of the choice of him. I mean, obviously he was an NBC icon, but the choice of letting NBC use him to sort of be a representative symbol of what they want to be, of our best moments. I think his show for many years was some of his best moments. I think the last couple of years they really had this Jones about being hip and funny. They did a lot more comedy. They had the Bear. Things changed. But the first half a dozen to 8 years, especially with the Osmonds, were some of the best variety TV ever. It really was.
Our guest for the two-hour duration today, we're so glad to have him, Chuck Gillespie. The Tribute to Andy Williams, starring Chuck Gillespie, August 20th, dinner
that
show.
That would be October.
What did I say, August?
You did say August.
Oh,
that would be next year.
Goodness,
I'm not quite sure what I'll be doing next August, but
I should let you read this. I'm all over the place.
That's all right. I'm yes. on you, baby.
Oh,
I'm
boy. October 20th, dinner show, 94th Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus. Reservations available by phone, 614-237-8887. And another show on October 22nd, matinee, same room, Columbus. Tickets at the website chucksings.com.
Right. Let me explain that briefly if I can. Because there's food involved, because it's a dinner show, the restaurant is handling the reservations for the Friday. And it's a Friday night, about 6 o'clock food. The show itself is a 90-minute show with about a 10-minute intermission. So it's less than 2 hours. We'll get you out of there in a reasonable time. The matinee, the concept of the matinee was, you know, there's going to be people who don't want to come out to dinner. There's going to be seniors, frankly, who don't want to be out too late. There's also seniors who live communally together or in this great market. And I wanted to be able to reach out to them, let them be brought over by bus. I've talked to a lot of activity directors and continue to. And I do that in Florida as well. But say, look, you know, let's collate your people, get them together. The price point is right. Come over for a 3:30 show. If they want to buy food, it'll be there available. If not, that's fine. They can get back in time to have their dinner at where they live. And that's all. That's beginning to be nicely responsive. The room is also, for Sunday at 3:30, a smaller amount of people allowable, so we have room for chairs or other needs, and it is fully handicap accessible. The tickets for that, however, because it's no food, it's not a dinner show, the tickets are only available through the website, chucksings.com. When you go there, you'll see a picture of me, and at the bottom, a banner that says, get your tickets here. Hit it, credit card, it's done. And those are $20. The dinner show is $35 or $40. We have a $5 price point differential just because there's a dance floor that we're filling with tables, and we're going to put people closer. I'm going to work right in the middle of them, and then it broadens out throughout the restaurant. And it is an intimate show. I don't have a big band. I'd love to. Maybe someday I'll have a big band arrangements of this show, but it's just me and you and Andy Williams.
October 20th and 22nd. Now, we're going to get a little taste of this as we end hour number one here. Almost There. Give me a little background on this.
I love this song. Okay. This is the sensitivities of the early 1960s. The songwriter really wants to say, are there any kids listening? Turn away. The songwriter is trying to say, it's time for us, girlfriend, to, you know, get it on in a very physical, meaningful way.
Oh, is that what this is about?
But they can't say that way. So listen for how he wraps the metaphors throughout this, and his eagerness and how he explains what it's going to be like. And again, this was the flip side of Street Where You Live, and it charted, and Street Where You Live is still on the album.
Chuck Gillespie, Andy Williams, Almost There. Here we go.
Almost there. We're almost there. How wonderful, wonderful our love will be. For you, for me. We're almost there. And soon has waited such a long time, now we're a kiss apart. Darling, this is the right time to let those kisses start, 'cause you're almost mine, and soon we'll find our paradise. Paradise so rare. Close your eyes, 'cause we're almost there. About this, and soon we'll find our paradise so rare. Close your eyes, sweetie, close your eyes, baby, close your eyes, or we're all.
Chuck Gillespie. How about that? Almost there. Way to go.
Thank you.
Oh, October 20th and October 22nd, 94th Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus. Is it fun to perform?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
A lot of people get nervous.
Well, I think we all do when we start. I can't remember that exact moment when I did start. It's been a long time ago. My mother directed me in The Prodigal Son in Bible school when I was like five. So I got an early jump on it and was singing first soprano in the church choir in Cincinnati where I grew up. But it's nothing like it, especially, and not to always bend it back here, but doing this material to this audience. This is not a show, by the way, for people 45 and under, maybe even 50. They don't even know the artist. They never heard of him. So it's a real interesting cutoff in recognition when you go back. Boom, don't know who it is. But when you look at boomers and beyond, it's a whole different thing. So I've got an audience of boomers and beyond like I had that night. And during that break, I get a lady and we do a little dance segment and I sing the rest of it to her. You see history come alive in their face. You see their reaction emotionally to it. And frankly, when I'm talking and singing to someone who's 70 or 75 or 77 or 80, when they may have felt or the circumstances are such that they feel that those days, those experiences, that kind of a world are gone for them, they're living a structured, cared for life, maybe, what I can do, and I'm blessed for an hour, is to bring them back to something, just to let this kernel of this life and the warmth refire inside of them. Like it? Oh, my God. There's nothing like it, Scott. There's really nothing like it. I got to sing with the big band last night in a special show for Ohio State Medical Center. There's nothing like that either. I mean, say that. You stand in front of 17 acoustic pieces, and you're all blowing a chart with your part being like on a toboggan going down a hill on a perfect course, and you've got all this thing going around you and you've got your little piece of it. It's great. It's exciting.
If Andy Williams would be sitting in the front row on October 20th, what would he think?
I think he would think, well, I know what he would think 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, he would say, "Don't sing my songs." This is absolutely true. He didn't want anybody to cover him, ever. I think now, I hope, if he looked at me fairly, and he looked at Jimmy's show, and he knows little Jimmy, little Osmond, he would say, "You both have different things. Let's take them one at a time. Jimmy, it's a nice knockoff of my TV show. Thank you. Chuck, I don't know you. You don't know me. You're Irish tenor, too. You sing the songs well. You sing the songs from your heart. You try to get the emotion of the song completely out and understood by the audience, by their reaction. And you tell my story in an honest way. You don't embellish it, but you respect it. Thank you." And I think he would say that. Something similar happened to me a number of years ago. Rosemary Clooney, when she was alive, was from Maysville, Kentucky, and when she retired back to Augusta, Kentucky, she was asked to front a music festival in October in Maysville, ostensibly to repair the theater where her first movie had been produced, but also just as a kind of a regathering of Maysvillians. My mother was living there. After my father had passed, she moved back there, took care of her mom. She had been from Maysville. So this is a chance for her to get the family. Oh, come on, me, my brother, the families, whatever, we're there. Beautiful table. It's on the main street in town, and on a flatbed with a big band is Rosemary. It was unbelievable. We saw her. We see her the second year. The second year, Mom, my mother, thinks, oh, my son thinks, I got to get him in this. Because they had a daytime show of the local talent in a beautiful old opera theater. I got into that show. This was 2001. The show was 3 weeks after 9/11. Originally, it had been intended to be a, a pastiche of show tunes and standards. Well, it became very solemn, and we did the show. It was great. I enjoyed it very much, and we enjoyed Rosie that evening. Next year, Rosemary Clooney dies in, oh my God, August, July. They're still doing the festival. They have to scramble and find a new act to do it, and they get Alison Krauss and Union Station because George had just done Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And he grabbed him and got him in there. Some of the people, who are they? I don't like that. Well, they were great. Alison Krauss is truly amazing. But they were doing a daytime show, too. What to do? What do they do? Chuck, we know what we want you to do. What? We want you to sing Rosemary's material. I'm sorry. Come again? Yeah. She's just died. We want you to sing her stuff. Okay. I'm in Columbus. I tell my wife. I'm amiably divorced now, but I tell my ex-wife. Okay. I start to collate material that isn't sex-specific, you know. Come on, my house, I couldn't do. Things like that. Okay. I have a piano player that I've been working with. We start to work on these songs. Then the local paper in Maysville promotes the show. And, Scott, as I'm sitting here, I swear to God, this was the headline. Columbus weatherman to sing. All right. Columbus weatherman to sing. I'm sure the Cloonies, when they saw that headline, thought, well, that's just fine. Mm-hmm. Especially when Columbus weatherman to sing shows up, comes on stage, and the program says, Songs of Rosemary Clooney. Her brother Nick and three other Clooney members are sitting right in the first row. So I had my moment there. I had my Andy Williams moment right there. This is how I got through it. My son, my young son, my mom. I hear the purse snap open and the Kleenex come out. I know she's there. I start the show. I have a friend with me, Johnny Walker. You've heard of him? Mm-hmm. We had a few conversations before the show. Piano player plays. I do 40 minutes. As soon as I'm done, four people jump up and applaud me from the first row. The Cloonies.
The Cloonies.
And everybody after them. It was the most amazing moment I've ever had as a performer, broadcaster, human being, to have people let me wipe away what at the time was a devastating headline and let them see me for what maybe I am or was it too. And I think we can all be multifunctional in this world. And the fact that I came to weather, Scott, because I needed to learn a news trade in order to work in television.
We're going to talk more about that next hour. We're going to get to the life in Columbus of Chuck Gillespie. He's the guest today.
I'm glad I set you up.
Nice segue there out of the first hour. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. Stay tuned. WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Here on WWGH 107.1 FM. Streaming live.